It's now 15 minutes after the hour of 8 a.m. As Senator Terrio, Senator French, and myself, Senator Seekins, are present. We have a number of bills we're going to try to wade through today. And we're going to start with House Bill 421. Good morning. Welcome to the Judiciary Committee this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Josh Appleby, staff to Representative Tom Anderson. House Bill 421 is legislation that was brought forward by the Alaska Land Title Association as a way to help people get clear titles to their homes and home mortgages. The intent and purposes of 421 is simple. Once a loan is paid, title must be cleared. Most banks in Alaska rarely keep a home loan for longer than 30 days. They'll sell the home mortgages to a servicing company, a company that's in the business of collecting the monthly payments over the life of the loan. Most mortgage service companies are located outside of the state of Alaska. Under current law, once you pay off your loan, there's no requirements for the servicer to make sure that that loan gets reconveyed and it's recorded and filed at the state recorder's office. For example, if you pay off your home mortgage, the lien on your home held by the mortgage servicer should be removed. At some point in the future, if you want to go sell or refinance that home, you don't want to have the old lien still out there showing unpaid. During testimony in previous committees, one title insurance company in Anchorage stated that over 1,400 deeds of trust were pending reconveyance. This means there could be literally thousands of trust deeds across the state that should be reconveyed, showing that the mortgage is in fact paid off. This problem has arisen in other states. House Bill 421 is crafted similar to a law in Idaho that was passed 3 years ago. The Idaho law has proven to be helpful in getting these reconveyances done in a more timely and proper fashion. House Bill 421 has the support of other sectors in the housing industry, including the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association, the Alaska State Home Builders, and it has been reviewed by people in several parts of the Alaska housing industry, including realtors and bankers. The deeds of trust covered under House Bill 421 are only those deeds held by title insurance companies. This bill does not open the opportunity for simply wiping out debts or any other obligations established by deeds of trust in other areas. If you look through the bill, you'll see that the bulk of it is establishing a notification process and the form that notification should take. It's intended to ensure a solid notification with quality control and uniformity. We do have online Brian Merrill from First American to answer specific questions if you have from the perspective of a title company. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for the sponsor's representative this morning? Not hearing any. Brian, I understand you're online with us. Mr. Merrill, if you'd like to put yourself on record, if you have any further comments that you'd like to address the committee with, you're welcome to go ahead.
Yes, Senator, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. If you just introduce yourself for the record, we're ready to go.
Okay. My name is Brian Merrill. I'm a state agency manager, state counsel, and state underwriter for First American Title Insurance Company. I'm also the immediate past president of the Alaska Land Title Association. It's a trade organization representing underwriters and title insurance agents throughout the state of Alaska. In fact, I believe all of them in the state are members. This legislation was put forth by our organization, as Mr. Appleby has already indicated, to assist our customers in clearing title of old deeds of trust, which we have information sufficient for us to believe that it has been paid off from the lenders themselves. In addition to that, we will be required under this legislation to give notice to the lenders and their servicers to let them know that it's our intention to reconvey the deeds of trust as we would normally do at their request should they make it. But we find many times, particularly with out-of-state lenders, that never happens, and folks come into us expecting to have clear title and they find these old deeds of trust from previous owners still sitting out there. And we'd like to be able to help them out in that situation, and that's what this bill is intended to do. Mr. Appleby pretty much explained the intent and the scope of the bill, but I'm certainly willing to answer any questions the committee may have about the bill at this time. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Merrill?
Just one, I guess, if I could.
Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Merrill, this bill seems to make perfect sense. I'm just curious why we need a law to do this. Is there something in the law that's prohibiting title companies from releasing these deeds, or what's the hang-up?
Mr. Chairman, Senator French, there actually is very little law in the statutes about how a deed of trust is to be released. It's just sort of a matter of common law, how the whole process is set up anyway. But there's certainly, as a part of that common law requirement, that the lender request that this reconveyance happen. And as I mentioned, so many times we find that a lot of, particularly out-of-state lenders, don't follow through on making that request, or they send the information for the request to be made through their old borrower who may have sold the property and has no further interest in doing anything with it, so it just ends up being thrown in the trash. And so this would help us to help future owners of the property, the ones who own the property and come in later to do transactions that find that these deeds of trust haven't been released, to help them out to make sure that it gets done. But I do agree with you. It is sort of a common sense thing. The problem is that there isn't any common sense in the law right now, so we need to put it there.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, is there anyone that... Are there anyone else online that wants to testify? Anyone in the audience that would like to testify on this bill this morning? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Discussion among the members. Will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olgan.
Move CS for House Bill 421, Judiciary. The committee with individual recommendations and ask for detached fiscal notes. That's it.
All right. Is there objection? Seeing none, unanimous ballot is cast, and we will move on. We'll sign that paperwork and move on next to House Bill or Senate Bill. $3.97. Let's just take a short at ease. We're back on the record, and we have. As everyone knows, because there's so many committees meeting on so many bills right now, it's tough to wrap people up and get them in here on any kind of schedule. So we're going to move to House Bill 549, and we have with us Vanessa Tondini from Chair McGuire's office. And Vanessa?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Senators. For the record, my name is Vanessa Tondini, staff to Representative McGuire. And I've presented this bill several times, so I'm just available to answer any questions.
I understand that there has been some conversation during the interim between now and the last time that we met on this bill. Are you able to summarize some of that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I believe there was concern regarding the penalty, and Senator Terrio, I'm not sure if there's going to be any amendments forthcoming, but I believe so.
Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, on page 2, line 9, was that we drop a zero?
So it's $10,000? So you're proposing an amendment that would change the amount, dollar amount on line 9 on page 2 to $10,000? Is that a Senator Olgan?
Got Alpha version. Did I miss
you? We had Quebec. Copy.
Ooh, yeah, House Fight.
Yeah.
We're not on that, but we're on. I saw you, and I know you about would associate with another bill. I'm sorry.
Right, we didn't vote.
Yeah, it's a good thing it's not the floor. That
time of year. Mr. Chairman, Senator Theriault, the sponsor does not object to that amendment.
Amendment then, Mr. Senator Theriault?
Yes.
Motion has been made by Senator Theriault to change the dollar amount on line 9, page 2 of the Quebec version from $100,000 to $10,000. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Further discussion?
Chairman, I have another amendment.
Senator French?
There's
another amendment. That first amendment would be amendment number 1.
We'll call this amendment number 2.
We'll call this one number 2. Okay, Senator French.
Got a copy. I'll move amendment number 2.
I'll object for discussion purposes.
The amendment number 2 would strike the lines we were just discussing from 8 to 12 and replace them with the lines here in the amendment. And the amendment would essentially turn what is proposed as a crime into a civil wrong. The amendment would allow either the Attorney General or an aggrieved person, which would be, I believe, a lawyer or the client, him or herself, to bring a civil action against an attorney or indeed an agent of the airlines, which this bill includes, to seek redress for any intrusion in their personal sphere during the 45-day so-called cooling-off period. I think the main benefit of this amendment is that it will allow these wrongs to actually get addressed. I think that supposing that an overworked DA's office is going to file a criminal complaint against a lawyer for making a phone call or sending a postcard to an injured victim of an airplane accident is not likely. I think that the caseloads of all our DA offices will preclude them from taking up these, what I think they will see as basically a civil issue. So this will put the power in the Attorney General's office or in the aggrieved person's hands to and basically let anybody serve as a private Attorney General. The United States government frequently does this, and let them proceed against the individual who's committed what I see as a civil wrong. The phone calls or harass or a ride to the airport by a lawyer, I think, is a wrong. I don't think it's a crime, and so that's what's behind this amendment.
Okay. Is discussion questions from the members?
I'd like to show it to Bill Sponsor.
Bill Sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, the sponsor opposes the amendment. As discussed yesterday, we feel that a criminal penalty is appropriate, and it would get the attention of the Bar Association. We are not imposing any jail time in our penalty, so that is not an issue. And just to address, to think that the DA's office is overworked, I should say that the civil division may be just as well, so they might not have any more of incentive to bring a case as the DA would. So we would just like to hold on to the criminal penalty.
Senator Rogan?
Thank you. What would the sanctions be, Vanessa, if an attorney is convicted of the crime in regards to something like this? Would this affect their ability to retain their membership in the bar?
Through the chair, Senator Rogan, yes, possibly. If an attorney does get a criminal charge on their record, I'm not that familiar with the process, knock on wood, but I believe the Bar Association would then take notice of such a charge versus just a civil action against them.
So they may possibly be disbarred for criminal, for if they had criminal conviction regarding their this matter.
Through the chair, Senator Rogan, yes, or the appropriate action might be taken against them.
I think the answer is it depends. I think the answer is it depends. It's hard to say with any degree of absolute certainty what the Bar Association will or won't do. And indeed, sometimes they wait until a criminal action is completed before they take their action, which may result in an unnecessary delay. If I were an attorney charged with this crime, I would drag it out as long as possible. I would insist on a jury trial, and I would appeal it as long as I could appeal it. And so I just frankly think that the civil route is quicker, cleaner, and more likely to be prosecuted than the criminal action.
Senator French, you wouldn't use that same tactic if it was a civil action?
The aura, if you will, of a criminal conviction is higher, and I think you would more likely lead to settlement. The two parties could sit down and settle their disagreement over the practice of driving airplane passengers to the hospital. That's what you're really trying to stop, and it's more likely you'll be able to reach an agreement, I think, between the parties in a civil setting than if you have a DA on one side who may or may not care whether someone's driving someone to the airport. They're just trying to get their case completed, and it's being pushed aside by GWIs, domestic violence cases, and all the other things they're supposed to do. I think the civil sphere, this is a rational first step. And if this step in 2 or 3 years hasn't produced any results and there's still these terrible things going on in the bush and people are being harassed, then make it a crime. But I think this is a rational step.
Senator Rogan? Other discussion on the amendment? Senator Terrio?
Senator French, you said the aura of the criminal action is greater, and I think I probably tend to agree. And the criminal can only be brought by the state.
Exactly.
Whereas you've given us wording here that says the AG or an aggrieved person, so the individual person.
Further discussion on the motion? All right. Call the roll.
Senator Terrio?
Pass.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Hogan?
No.
Senator
Seacrest? No.
Senator
Terrio? No.
Further discussion, any other amendments on the bill? Further discussion on the bill. I appreciate the amendment. I think $100,000 was a little bit high. I think the criminal action is a greater deterrent, and I was looking at it primarily as a deterrent. I think, Senator French, you had a pretty compelling argument, but I went along with the thought that it was just a greater deterrent to the activity. And actually, made a lot of sense to try this and then go forward, but I think this is a good bill at the way it is now. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Committee's will of the committee on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate bill. I'm working on another bill.
House Bill 549.
Sorry. House Bill 549. To the committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection?
I'll object.
Objection. Call the roll, please.
Senator French?
No.
Senator Rogan?
Yes.
Senator Tendo?
Yes.
Senator Seacrest?
Yes. So this bill is moved forward. Thank you, Ms. Tondini, for your help. And we'll take a short at ease. We're back on the record. House Bill 275 is where we're going next here this morning, and I've been working with Representative Chenault's staff, and Sue has a very bad back. I'm in total sympathy with people with bad back problems, having had to go there myself a couple of times. And if you remember, I told her we would just carry forward with the conversation without her. If you remember the last time that we got together, we talked about some issues in the bill that were troublesome to some people, and over time I have sat down and worked with several people from the equine industry, several people with the two veterinarians who are good friends, a couple of other people who are more animal advocates, try to find an area where we can adequately protect animals without becoming extremist, in quotes. And I think what I've suggested here, you see, it's not in the form of an amendment or anything at this point in time, but it is a, if I took the bill and started out with the first section on one, and Sue has been working with me on this, and I think we're pretty close in agreement. If you take a look starting at section one, where we've said that the minimum standard of care for animals includes food and water sufficient to maintain each animal in good health, an environment compatible with protecting and maintaining the good health and safety of the animal, and reasonable medical care at times and to the extent available and necessary to maintain the animal in good health. Part of the problem is we have a very small number of veterinarians in the state of Alaska. And if you go to Ketchikan, there's one veterinarian in the entire community. You go to Fairbanks, you'll find more. You'll find more in Anchorage. But veterinarians today in the bush community are totally absent. There are none out there. So how do you provide medical care, and how do you define that in a manner that if there's no veterinarian there, you try to provide medical care, reasonable medical care to an animal where there is no veterinarian available? Or if you're on a trip, you're on a backpack trip, you're with a horse, you're on a dog mushing trip with a team of dogs, you have to use the best available medical care that you have. And that's all that I think that a person should be required to have to do. Find the best available medical care, reasonable at the times and to the extent available and necessary. That just makes it more compatible with where we live in Alaska today. If your dog has a huge gouge and it's infected and you're not doing anything to try to care for that animal, I think that verges in the area of not being compatible with a minimum standard of care for the animal. Now, we've put in there that any determination as to whether or not the standards of this chapter are met shall be based on the professional opinion of a veterinarian licensed under AS 0898. Here again, we're making that final determination by someone who's a professional in the field. It's very easy for someone to say, you're not taking good enough care of your dog, and I say, yes, I am. The dog is old. It's heavy. It might be a little bony. It's on hormones. It looks like it's not being fed enough, and yet that's all the dog can really do to stay alive and is getting adequate medical treatment. So we're saying that a veterinarian, someone who's a professional in the field, needs to make that final determination. It shouldn't just become a he said, she said situation. Or a photograph does not necessarily always give you a good indication as to the health and well-being of the animal at that time in its life and under the certain circumstances that are there. So we've said, and the department can adopt regulations to implement this section. In the original bill, it said that the department, other standards for health and safety of animals as set by the regulation. And that's just too open-ended for the folks in the animal industry to say that now someone can, by regulation, put new standards for minimum care of animals in place. So I think this now, talking with Sue and going back and forth, we've got a fairly compatible definition of what the minimum standards of care are. Any discussion on that particular area? None? Senator Ogden?
You're talking about...
Just that one first section right there.
Page one.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would ask why the sanitation portion of the bill is left out in your...
Environment. Here again, I think environment includes a reasonable sanitation level. I could get into trying to define an environment for an animal, for an example, that could if I put one of my horses inside of my heated foaling barn, it's heated, it's warm, it's light, but the humidity's too high. Because in an enclosed area, the humidity can get too high and it's very bad on their respiratory system. In my barn, for an example, I have a humidistat. When it gets to 70%, it evacuates to get it down below 70%. But that, how can I define that in statute for what I think is the right standard of care? Senator French?
Mr. Chairman, I think that you're making a good point, but I'm not certain that it applies to the topic of sanitation.
The environment does. Here again, I could talk to you about manure. Manure. We have sled dogs. We clean the sled dog yard twice a day, make sure that it doesn't get fecal material all over everything. We clean the, in the wintertime, we clean the horse containment area once a week. It's frozen. It's not caustic. It doesn't cause great problems. We are go in there with a bobcat or a tractor and scrape it off the ground about once a week. Some people don't do it all winter long. It doesn't constitute a health problem. It's just uncomfortable. So I think what we need to do again is allow that veterinarian who wants to make that determination as to whether or not the environment includes the proper sanitation levels. It's difficult to try to explain. The same standard might not apply for a horse in a corral as it would for a dog in a dog yard. So we're trying to give them some reasonable guidelines that a veterinarian would make the final determination whether or not it was the proper environment. Further discussion on that section, Senator Ogden?
Some people that have, for example, years past, pretty much open range horses in places like Homer and Kodiak and things like that, and some people may think that that's an awful thing, you know. And some of my problems with these bills is that knowing different people's level of emotional attachment to animals, and I don't mean to make judgments of what's right or wrong, but there are some people that love animals more than people, and feel that animals should be raised to literally have the same protections as humans, as far as, you know. I mean, honestly, my daughter was on a tour in Ketchmick Bay with her school. She was a chaperone for younger kids, and the people who were giving the tour that hosted the place where they stayed, I would think for a group that my daughter's associated with, so I'll say I don't want to identify anybody. But they were out there talking about how the starfish murder the clams. You know? The starfish murder the clams. That's how they described it to these kids. And my daughter's going, they what? You know, they murder clams? I mean, honestly, there's some people out there that are a little bit out there as far as animal rights. Like, an animal doesn't have a right to exist, or doesn't have a right to murder another animal to continue to live, even though God or the natural order or whatever your belief is set it up that way. So that's what I'm worried about. Those are my concerns with these kind of bills. And I can, I've had friends that have open range horses over at Ketchmack Bay. It's a tough way for a horse to make it through the winter. And some of them might not have, you know, a bear. I know there's one of them was a living legend in our neighborhood that had a big old chunk out of its rear end from where a bear got a hold of it in the spring when it was born. And I don't know, you know, so it's all pretty subjective. Some one person's standard of good care will be another person's level of outrage, and as long as those are my problems with some of these, putting these things in the statute.
Senator Ogden, I absolutely agree with you. That's very difficult. We raise registered American quarter horses. They are outside in the wintertime. We may put a blanket on them at 30 below zero. I have friends in other parts of the world that when it gets 60 degrees above zero, they put a blanket on their horse. but my veterinarian would tell you that I have the healthiest horses in the interior of Alaska because we make sure they have proper food, proper water, and they grow a good heavy coat, and so it's not cruel to them. But that's why we've tried to say that a veterinarian, licensed veterinarian, is the one to make these decisions, because there are different standards of care in different people's minds. Gets to 30 below zero, you know, one of the things we look at out there with our horses is if they've got snow on their back, they're probably healthy because it's not even melting from the heat coming through that good thick blanket of hair. If it's melting, we probably have a problem. And so we would examine that horse. And as an alternative, we have a heated hospital foaling facility where if a horse is in distress, we can take it in. But we know that the healthiest thing for them to do is to stay outside under all circumstances for their respiratory system. But other people would say it's not right to leave that horse outside. So, but a veterinarian, a large animal veterinarian, would tell you that probably my standard of care is better than keeping them indoors. And so you find this divergence. And that's why if we're going to have a minimum standard, we have to have professionals making the decision as to what constitutes that. And that's what I've tried to look at here.
And I appreciate that, because if I might, Mr. Chairman, I've had horses in my yard that my neighbors, that same horse that got nailed by the barrel when it was a baby, and the end of its life was its teeth were gone and wouldn't digest food, and it was a bag of bones. And my wife and I took it on as a project to try to bring that horse back into health. And driven in my yard, seeing that bag of bones in my yard, somebody would jump to conclusions and say, look, he's abusing that animal. But actually, we were pouring the best feed and the best money, and we could get into that thing, try to save it.
Right.
I ended up putting it down, myself. But
I agree.
You need some professional.
It's a tough thing to look at, and we're trying to find where that ground exists, because there are documented cases of animal cruelty.
Oh, sure.
So that's what I wanted to get into in the next section here. If you looked at 110, let me just step through that. If you did believe here that there was some cruelty that was taking place to an animal, we've said you can bring that complaint with a public or private animal control agency or organization, the department, which is here the Department of Environmental Conservation, or with a peace officer. And that would then be referred to, or they may refer that complaint to a peace officer. So if it's, let's say it's the Alaska Equine Rescue, they take a look at the animal and they think, in their opinion, there is no problem there. They may just not refer it. If they think there is a problem there, they would refer it to a peace officer. That peace officer then has the process of the availability of being able to go through the process and get a search warrant and go out and take a look. That when they get there, they have several options. They can say, well, I don't think this warrants further investigation. Or if they do think it warrants further investigation, they could actually place the animal or the animals into protective custody. And then at that point, when that police officer felt that that was necessary, they'd have to request an immediate inspection and decision by a licensed veterinarian. And that placement into protective custody is in the immediate best interest of the animal. If no veterinarian is available to perform an inspection, then that police officer must communicate with a veterinarian who has, after hearing a description of the condition of the animal and its environment, decided it's to the immediate best interest of the animal that it be placed into protective custody. If the police officer is not able to communicate with a veterinarian before the officer may take an animal, an officer must decide it is in the immediate best interest of the animal to be placed into protective custody. So we've got says if a veterinarian is available, needs to come out and inspect. No veterinarian is available, you need to try to communicate. If you can't get in communication, you have to use your best judgment to place that animal, whether or not to place that animal in protective custody. We've gone away from the word seize and use the word protective custody. I think that's more in line with what the intent of most people is to protect the interest, the best interest of that animal at the time. A peace officer here is basically, from another portion of the statutes, is an officer of state troopers, police force, village public safety officer, regional safety officer. Now then, if that peace officer has to place that animal in protective custody before it can be removed from the location, could be placed into protective custody on the location, maybe the best interest is to remove the animal. Then we address that in 120, how to do that, how to try to notify the owner if they're available. Where it would go, could go into the care of a custodian. That custodian could be a veterinarian. That custodian could be Alaska Equine Rescue. It could be the SPCA, any organization that's willing to care for the animal in the interim period of time. So it could go to a custodian. Next section, 130, says, okay, what if that animal, you get there and it seems to be the best interest of that animal that it be destroyed at that time? So you have a decision-making tree as well as how you could get to that point. First would have to be with communication to a veterinarian. And secondly, if none was available, the peace officer would have to make that decision based on his own best information.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but is this the same as the Section 1-0355-130 that's in the current bill?
I think so. I've tried to number it the same just as I went through it, Senator French.
It looks identical. So I was just curious.
Yeah, it's very close. It's very close. Except I've used protective custody and removal as the terms of how we handle the animal. Then the court can make some decisions. Adoption, destruction, etc. Some definitions, and then we get down into the definition of cruelty to animals in the first degree. This was probably the hardest section for me to try to get people to look at what that constituted. For example, there were some people who still want to be able to, and I don't know why, prepare a dog or a cat for human consumption. We're getting into cultural discussions, and so we dropped that out of that area. But we said if you knowingly inflict severe or prolonged physical pain or suffering on an animal, use a decompression chamber, that's current statute. Criminal negligence, fails to care for an animal. Violates a cruelty of animals in the second degree to more than one animal.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question here? Right. It seems as though your bill has dropped cruelty to animals in the second degree, or is this...
No, there should be a second one there. Senator French, we'll give you the copy we just gave to you.
Okay, I was looking at the old one. Thank you. Yep.
I had to do this as much as possible between the hours of 10 and 2 in the morning. we're so busy. And then try to communicate with a whole bunch of people during the day. The steps down through there. The section would not apply to scientific research governed by accepted standards. That might be feeding clams to your cat. I don't know if that would qualify. So, but the humane destruction of an animal, accepted veterinary animal husbandry practices, fishing, hunting, trapping activities allowed by law, generally accepted dog mushing or pulling contests, rodeos or stock contests, or professionally accepted training and discipline standards. Failure to provide the minimum standards would be prima facie evidence of failure. Senator Ogden.
Just clearing my throat.
court could require forfeiture of the other three things there and prohibit a person from owning animals. Second degree, we just got to that point in second degree. Trying to get to second degree was very difficult. So we got people that would basically agree that if you recklessly abandon an animal in a place where it may suffer severe injury, hunger, or exposure, let's just say you lock it in your garage and you don't have any food and water in there. In the standard I could generally find people to agree to is if you locked an animal up where it could not get food or water for more than 72 hours, that was excessive cruelty. Senator Ogun?
I think that description is so broad. If you leave your dog outside and it gets hit by a car, there's a leash law. Let your dog out or your cat out, it violates the law in a lot of cities to have anything running loose, but it's common practice, and all of a sudden, your dog or cat gets run over. And
this is where I had, second degree was where I had the hardest time trying to find any agreement on the part of anybody.
There's a number of other things that can happen here too. I don't know how many times I've seen animals hit on the road and people keep on driving. What are you supposed to do? A compassionate person, I know my staff would scoop the animal up and drop whatever she was doing and take it to the vet and pay all the vet bills, and that's because she loves critters. I've heard that she sees an animal she'll like, she'll follow the car around in the back of the truck, she'll follow the car for miles just because she likes that animal. That's one of the beautiful things about her. Other people are pretty busy, and you hit something that runs off. I've approached injured animals, and the animal's injured and it wants to bite your hand off.
Yep.
I'm compassionate. Wait, did I say that on the record? I don't know. Contrary to but I've stopped and tried to assist animals. And literally, these dogs are like, they want to rip you to shreds. All they know is they're hurt. If you get near them, so you try to help the animal, and then all of a sudden the animal wants to rip you to shreds, and you're guilty of not rendering assistance to the animal. So I don't know. It's a pretty tough one.
It's a tough one. I'll tell you, it was a hard one for me to try to. I couldn't find agreement, and so I wanted to throw it out there. I'll tell you my opinion. I think we need to expand what we do have on the books now. I think, especially in light of some of the atrocities that we have seen, we need to be working towards some kind of a comprehensive overhaul of what we do have on the books without entering into, or without causing accepted practices in the state that aren't cruel to all of a sudden become cruel. I think if it was up to me at this particular time, I know before it got to me this had a lot of work, I would suggest that we try to adopt pretty much the section down until we get to cruelty to animals in the second degree, and maybe try to address that in the next session to try to get a better definition of what that is. We have, in effect, we're amending the first of cruelty to animals in the first degree the way we see it now. We're getting some kind of a definition of minimum standards of care, and we're allowing for the protective custody practice of the to take place under statute, which we don't really have at this particular point in time. And I think it's got enough sideboards on it that it may have to be settled out a little bit, but I think they're good sideboards. It's a good way to try to approach this. I support that approach, but now that's me. I wanted to get a feel to the rest of the committee. I intend on working with this sponsor to try to flesh out some more stuff even in the next session, but we're running up against 5 more days, and that's it. I'd like to see something addressed this year.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
I would move an amendment. Would you like this an amendment?
Conceptual amendment, if you want to, based on this memorandum.
The memorandum that you provided, that we just discussed.
Down through
everything up to page 1 to page 4.
Part of 5 there? In the, you have the new amendment. Yeah, this new sheet.
Up to page 5, up to the 480 angles and second degree is an amendment. The conceptual note to the bill.
So this would be the body of the bill then?
That's correct. And then delete everything else. Is that the correct way to do it?
Yes. Senator French?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at a bill that's been worked over pretty hard, passed right. The House, and it came to us, and from the last meeting, it looked like we were going to take out one definition under cruelty to animals in the first degree. Looked like we were going to either take out or, if you will, water down sections 3 and 4 of cruelty to animals in the second degree, the steel jaw, leg hold, snare, and so forth, and the dog in the back of a pickup truck issue. But frankly, everything else looked to me like it'd been pretty well thought through. So I'm not entirely sure which options you're offering me. If you're offering this as a CS.
It would constitute a CS, yes, Senator French.
That's the way I see it. I'm going to object. I think the bill that we have here can be fine-tuned in a matter of a few minutes by plucking out some of the items that I think we're all in agreement that either need to go or need to be, let's just say need to go. But this, I think, is a pretty serious working over of the bill, and I don't doubt for a second your intentions. I know you're very committed to animals and your life and your personal life and so forth. I guess I just, without the sponsor here, I'd...
Sue's here. She just came in.
Oh, good.
And she works for the sponsor.
Have we heard... can we hear from Sue before we take this up
sure.
any further?
Back doing better today, Sue?
Yeah, somewhat. For the record, my name is Sherilyn Wright, and I'm staff to Representative Mike Chenault. And I'm here to answer questions.
Well, let me just ask if you had time to look this proposed, we'll call it a CS for the purposes of discussion, from Senator Seekins over.
Yes, sir, we have. We have had 113 telephone calls about this bill since I appeared from you before. Some of them not so pleasant. I don't know whose district they're from. This is a statewide issue. I don't think anybody's happy with this particular... the information that we have at the current time is that they'd like to see the bill passed as it was. At this point in time, because time is short, the sponsor's willing to accept whatever judiciary will pass out of committee. It's as simple as that. But I will tell you that we've had phone calls from everywhere, and I'm sure certain your offices have, and I apologize for the conflict. But
there's no apology necessary to me. We're trying to get
sure.
something done and to do it the right way. So
yeah.
I appreciate everybody's input.
And if I could just ask, I know, I mean, I think I understand what you're saying by a lot of phone calls, but can you just articulate that a little bit further so I understand where exactly we are in the debate?
Well, this bill has gone through a metamorphosis from a one-and-a-half-page bill to a marrying of Representative Crawford's bill with our bill. It went through 20 hours of waiting and testimony in House Judiciary. It went through a lot of scrutiny from animal control officers statewide. And if I could say that most of our communications came from Anchorage or Fairbanks or the Mat-Su, I would tell you that, but it isn't. Everybody everywhere is concerned about the Carolyn Boughton case. The most egregious cases that we have had that are just a reflection of a civilization that just shouldn't be. And for these folks to be able to continue to go on and abuse animals in this way, it's just not correct. Now, as far as getting a sectional on the memo that we received, I have not done that. It's our point, I believe, in our office to deal with the worst cases. At this point, we've worked long and hard. This is the fourth year we've had on this.
Well, let me just ask you, do you think Senator Seekins' CS deals with the worst cases?
I can't tell you that. I think that, yes, probably it does. Like I said, this was kind of given to us as a, I think it was for your information. But if this is actually what the bill does, we're going to take it and run with it. I'm not here to object.
Fair enough. Senator Ogden.
My concern is that, I don't like those cases, those really awful cases you hear about, any more than anybody else does. I mean, it's, and I think the way the CS is written, it more than adequately deals with those kind of cases. Because let's be realistic, you're only going to prosecute the worst cases. But sometimes in reaction to fix those kind of cases, people overreact and make it to where farmers can't farm or dog mushers can't mush. And there are those out there that don't want farmers to farm or dog mushers to mush. You know, they think that's cruel. God bless them, they're entitled to their opinion, but they don't want, and they make good choices in their lives for them. They eat tofu instead of chicken, and things like that. So I think this is a balance between people that are extremists and want all animals to ever never be eaten by a man and probably say a prayer for the plant that died for their nourishment, because a living thing died. I mean, the example that I used before you got here was my example about people that were giving a field trip in Ketchikan Bay and talked about starfish murdering clams. I mean, there's people really believe that and think that way, and they're entitled to that. But so I think this is a good balance. I think this will get the bad actors, and I'm willing to let the CS as amended go. And I've got an appointment in a couple minutes.
I know, I understand. I'll tell you, Mr. Hogan, I want these other people to. We have Sally Camp, Clampett, and Ethel Christensen online, and I just wanted to give. Sally said she wanted to testify, and I want to give her that chance real quickly here before you leave. I know you got about 4 minutes. Sally, have you heard our discussion this morning?
I have, Chairman Seekins. Thank you very much, and thank you. I know you're all in a hurry, and I don't blame you. I do have a couple of comments. First, I thank you for taking this on so late. Secondly, I appreciate your willingness to put this through the committee with the basics intact. I have one serious concern, and that is that you have increased the defense of cruelty to include a couple of disciplines of riding and training practices. Now, training practices was put in as a defense of cruelty in 1998. It had not been there previously. And I'm not sure if I understand the need to defend a couple of disciplines of riding and training practices as opposed to the condition of the animal or the acts committed. I would strongly recommend that those be taken back out. Rodeo was not in there, so I don't know who added that or why. But there are other disciplines in riding, and for those of you who are, pardon me, non-horse people,
training, just to get an idea, the training practices were in the draft that came to us, Sally, just conform to professionally accepted training and discipline standards.
Yeah, and that was put in 1998.
Yeah,
and it kind of slipped in at the very end. In 98, there were some very modest changes made to the current standards. They changed.
I understand. And I've got to tell you that the easy thing for me to do as a senator here, and I'm not going to cut you short, but I got one guy here. We can love this bill to death, or we can get the first parts of it out and continue to work on it over the interim, which is I'm committed to do, to work with the sponsor and with the other folks.
Sure.
Over the interim and clean this up even more next year. But I think we've got the egregious stuff covered here for this year, and I feel happy about that. I don't want to love it to death and kill the whole thing, is what I'm telling you.
Well, neither do we.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So we actually, if I can, I've got about another minute with Senator Ogden here. We have a proposed CS that would conform down through the first 4.5 pages down to section 1161-142. We'll, if you'd allow me the leeway, we'll make sure that CS is done and forwarded out. We'll run copies past the members if you need to, but I'd like to get this thing run out of here. And so if there's no further discussion, I'd like to have the motion from Senator Ogden. Is there objection to that motion? Hearing none, the CS is approved as it is. And we have a motion to move the CS out of committee, the conceptual CS out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 275
with the conceptual CS the way it is.
As amended in the conceptual CS, is very detailed.
Okay. Okay. Without objection, it's moved on. Thank you very much, and we'll just take a brief at ease so I can get my concentration back.
I'm just wondering what's going to happen.
I got just a brief at ease.
Senator Lincoln's hate crime.